Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Let us start in prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, we come before your blessed throne in heaven, and we thank you and we bless you and we praise you for a wonderful week. We thank you for your Sabbath that's drawing on now, and we thank you for allowing us to enter your rest. We pray, Father, your blessing upon us as this set-apart day starts, and that your Ruach would guide and lead us and help us to rejuvenate our minds and our hearts toward you. And we thank you for all things. We thank you for the great sacrifice of sending your Son to pay the penalty of our sins. We thank you for all the wonderful places we've seen from your word. And we give you praise for all these things in your Son Yeshua's name. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Okay, so last week we went over a very interesting Bible study on the Kenites. And it's interesting, you know, I was looking at my notes from, like I said, 13 years ago when I first put that study together. And I was, in my notes, I was showing, you know, that, because there really are not a lot of Kenites that are left. Some are in Iraq, some are in Syria, and there really are not that many that are in this area. And yet, in my notes from like 13 years ago, I was naming this area even though I didn't know what this area was. I've never been to the area. But I'm like, you know, these Kenites are here in this area, and here we are, you know, seeing it. So it was a very, very interesting study going into the Kenites and who they are and connecting it with our story coming from over here. So in part two, it's called the Rechabites part two, the blessing of Jabez. The blessing of Jabez. And what I'm really going to get into, because lineage is so important in the Bible from the beginning to end. Everything, a matter of fact, in the Bible is about lineage, one way or another. Whether it's the whole story of the lineage starting with Adam and Adam's lineage going through. I mean, we have every single person from Adam. I was showing you, if you add up the first 10 names of the lineages in Genesis 5, it tells us basically the whole plan of salvation. And then you have, you know, Abraham and everyone from there. So if lineage wasn't that important, if you think in 6,000 years, right, and it, wow, how hard it is to preserve things, and we literally have every last person that was born in the lineage from Adam, you know, all the way down to Yeshua. So there's no missing link in the lineage or anything like that. We went in our Messianic apologetic class about Genesis 3:15 being the first scripture, Messianic scripture, and what is it about? Lineage. It's about the seed of the woman. So today what I really want to do is pretty much show you the lineage, because there's another lineage in Bible beside the lineage of Israel, and we see even in the New Testament when you come to Messiah, you're a seed of Abraham, and you're grafted into the seed of Israel. But like I said, there's this parallel lineage that goes throughout all the Bible, and it's actually, it actually coincides with Israel and marries into the lineage of Israel and is blessed by Israel, and I've never heard anybody really talk about it. So I think it's really fascinating because it's dealing with the whole subject we were talking about this week on the Rechabites. And I'm going to start in Chronicles, 1 Chronicles 4. And I always wondered before this, before the study I did, why some of these lineages are in there. Esau's lineage, this lineage, and it's like, you know, it just doesn't make sense. Why are they in there? There must be a reason. And now it pieces together as we study this whole thing of the Kenites and the Rechabites. And like I said, being the seed of Cain, not really Kenites, but Cainites, being metal workers, like we saw in Genesis 4. So we'll go over a couple of the scriptures we did last week, but most of them we're going to be really dealing with this subject of the lineage. So 1 Chronicles 4 and verse 1 says, the sons of Judah, right? So again, whose lineage is this? It's the Israelite lineage through the tribe of Judah. Were Pharez, Hezron, Carmi, Hur, and Shobal. So, no surprises here. This is Judah, where Yeshua came from, right? But yet, as we go down in this lineage of Judah, look at verse 9. And Jabez was more honorable than his brothers, and his mother called his name Jabez, saying, because I bore with sorrow. So, why would Jabez be in the middle of the lineage of Judah? And Jabez called to the Elohim of Israel, saying, if indeed you would bless me and make my border larger, and your hand would be with me, and that you would keep me from evil so that it may not grieve me. And Elohim gave him what he asked. Wow. So it's an amazing thing he's asking. Yahweh's given him what he's asking. And Caleb, the brother of Shua, fathered Mehir. He was the father of Esthon. So we'll go on here in a... Well, maybe I'll just finish with this, then I'll get back to Jabez. And Esthon fathered Beth Rapha and Pasea. Tehina, the father of Ir Nahash. These are the men of Rekah, you know, from the Rechabites. And the sons of Kenaz, Othiel and Syria, and the son of Othiel was Hathath. And Mi'anothah fathered Ophrah, and Syria fathered Joab, the father of the Valley of the Craftsmen. Once again, we see this, right? For they were craftsmen. That's what we said, going all the way back to Tubal Cain. And the sons of Caleb, the sons of Jephunneh, Ira, Elah, Naam, and Elah's sons was Kenaz. So we see Caleb, who there's only two people, 20 and above, that go into the promised land, right? And one is Joshua, who is from the tribe of Ephraim, and the other is Caleb, who is partly Judah and partly a Kenite. So really, really interesting. Going back now to Jabez, because this is a really, really fascinating character, because there's very little said about it in the Bible, but it comes out of nowhere in the middle of, you know, a very, very important genealogy, and it says he's more honorable than his brothers, and his mother called his name Jabez because I bore with sorrow, and he calls Elohim and asks for this great blessing, and Elohim gives it to him. So he must have been a pretty righteous person. And the Jewish Encyclopedia actually says Jabez was from a family clan of Kenites from the Rechabites. And the Septuagint here actually has a little more that is not in the Masoretic text. And when it talks about Jabez being more honorable than his brothers, it also says... And the prodigy of the brother of Rechab, son of Jabez. So we see literally Jabez is definitely then a Rechabite who is a Kenite. So, and is mixed in here with the lineage of Judah. First Chronicles 2 and verse 55, again, that Rechabites are Kenites. Let's show that once more. 1 Chronicles 2 and verse 55. And the families of the scribes who lived at Jabez, the Tirathites, the Shimeathites, the Sukathites, these are the Kenites who came from Hemath, the father of the house of Rechab. So there's no doubt that, you know, it's just a branch of that, but they are, the Rechabites definitely are Kenites. And as we went over, I'll read this again in Jeremiah 35, because it's a really important story. You know, here it is, as Israel is going through a real hard time here, right? And we see that the Rechabites get this great blessing from Yahweh. Jeremiah 35. Start here. We'll read the whole thing because we read it last week, but I'll read 1 through 10. The word which came to Jeremiah from Yahweh in the days of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, saying, go to the house of the Rechabites and speak to them and bring them to the house of Yahweh into one of the rooms and give them wine to drink. Then I took Jazaniah, the son of Jeremiah, the son of Habaziniah, and his brothers and his sons and the whole house of the Rechabites, And I brought them into the house of Yahweh, into the room of the sons of Hanan, the son of Igdaliah, a man of Elohim, which was near the room of the rulers, above the room of Maaseiah, the son of Shallum, the keeper of the threshold. And I set bowls and cups full of wine before the sons of the house of the Rechabites, and I said to them, drink wine. And they said, we will not drink wine. For Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, commanded us, saying, you shall not drink wine, you nor your sons forever. And you shall not build a house, nor sow seed, nor plant a vineyard, nor shall there be anything to you. But all your days you shall live in tents, so that they may live many days on the face of the land where you are residing. So kind of like the way we look at the Amish today, right? That never really mixed in with society, and they never took, you know, the electricity, and they're still riding horse and buggy. This is kind of the way the Rechabites were to the Israelites. They never really meshed in. They stayed in their nomadic culture of living in tents. And it says, we have obeyed the voice of Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, to all that he commanded us, to drink no wine all our days, we, our wives, our sons, and our daughters, nor to build houses for us for our dwelling, nor do we have a vineyard or field or seed. But we live in tents, and we have obeyed and done according to all that Jonadab, our father, commanded us. And the Bedouins, they really, really, really believe this way. Some of you have probably been with us both here in Jordan and also in Israel, where we've literally have slept in Bedouin tents, you know, and the hospitality and the meal you get is unbelievable. You know, you're eating on the floor on pillows, but they have gigantic buffets and wonderful food. And just the way that they are, the hospitality is absolutely amazing that Bedouin people have. And like it says, they're living in tents. And a good friend of mine in Israel that was a Bedouin for many years, and he was telling me the story of his father, where his father, you know, was doing all these things and was very successful, because you can't believe how successful these people are and very, very wealthy, which shows because of the blessing Yahweh gives them. And he said his father was able to build this gigantic house that was almost like a mansion, and yet he had a tent in front of the house, and he still slept in the tent, even after he was a millionaire. You know, he just couldn't stop not sleeping in the tent. So that's the way they are, and you see they don't change. Praise Yahweh on that. Verse 19, so Yahweh of hosts, the Elohim of Israel, says this, Jonadab, the son of Rechab, shall not have a man cut off from standing before me all the days. Wow, talk about a blessing there, right? But he would literally have a man always standing before Yahweh all the days. Also, let's go to 1 Kings 10, because we see that when Yehu came against Jezebel and fought against her, and he was going to destroy all the paganism of all this stuff, who was the one that helped Yehu? 2 Kings 10. 2 Kings 10, and I'm going to read verse 11, then drop it down to verse 15. And Jehu killed all those left to the house of Ahab in Jezreel, and his great men and his friends and his priests, until he did not leave a survivor to them. So Jehu was a real warrior. You know, he was a tough guy, may have had his problems like a lot of people do, but wow, you know, he was tough. And he fought, you know, you see what happened with Jezebel. Drop down to verse 15. So he still has to go and fight the rest of these people there. Look what happens. And he left there and found Jonadab, the son of Rechab, coming to meet him. And he blessed him and said to him, is your heart right? As my heart is right. As my heart is with your heart. And Jonadab said, it is. If it is, give your hand, and he gave his hand, and he made him come up with him onto the chariot. So, wow, he's literally saying they have the same spirit there. And he said, come with me and see my zeal for Yahweh. And they made him ride in the chariot. And he came to Samaria and killed all those left of Ahab in Samaria until he had destroyed him according to the word of Yahweh that he spoke to Elisha. So we see here, right, Jonadab, the Rechabite, comes with Jehu and helps him do this. Drop down to verse 23. And Jehu and Jonadab, the son of Rechab, went into the house of Baal, and said to the servants of Baal, search and see that there are none of the servants of Yahweh here with you, but only the servants of Baal. And they came in to offer sacrifices and burnt offerings. And Jehu had set for himself 80 men on the outside. And he said, the man who lets any of the men escape whom I am bringing into your hands, his life for the life of him. And it happened when he finished offering the burnt offering, Jehu said to the runners and the third officers, go and strike them. Do not let any man come out. And they struck them by the edge of the sword. And the runners and the third officers threw them out. And they went into the city to the house of Baal. And they brought out the pillars of the house of Baal and burned them. And they broke down the pillar of Baal and broke down the house of Baal and made it into an outhouse to this day. And Jehu destroyed Baal out of Israel. So here we see, you know, well, why in Jehu's position there, right, as the commander, you know, he's going to be king, he's got all this power. Why would he go meet Jonadab? Because he saw the blessing that Yahweh had put on the Rechabites, and he wanted that blessing with him as he was about to destroy these people, and he did. Jonadab went with him and helped him in this. So we see that they only worshiped Yahweh. I never see anywhere in the Bible where I'm seeing the Rechabites or the Kenites worshiping pagan or not worshiping anything but Yahweh. Judges 5. Judges chapter 5 with Deborah and Barak, right? And again, what you'll always see is you'll always see that the Kenites and the Rechabites are always aligning with Israel. You know, that is who their partner is, right? Their alliance is always with Israel. And we're going to see when any good things happen in Israel, even with the king, what does he look to do? He looks to bless the Kenites and the Rechabites. And Deborah and Barak, the son of Abinadab, saying on that day, for the absolving of the leadership of Israel, for the volunteering of the people, bless Yahweh. Listen, O kings, give ear, princes. I, even I, will sing to Yahweh. I will sing praise to Yahweh, the Elohim of Israel. O Yahweh, when you went forth out of Seir, Mount Seir, when you marched out of the fields of Edom, the earth trembled, the heavens dropped. Yea, the clouds dropped water. The mountains quaked before the face of Yahweh. This Sinai quaked from before Yahweh, the Elohim of Israel. In the days of Shamgar, the son of Anath, in the days of Yael, the highways ceased, and those going in the paths traveled by the byways. Drop down to verse 23. Curse Ma'oz, said the messenger of Yahweh. Curse the ones living it bitterly because they did not come to help, to the help of Yahweh, to the help of Yahweh against the warriors. Most blessed among women? Wow, so now they're going to say, who are the most blessed among women? The way like Miriam, the mother of Yeshua in the New Testament is most blessed among women. But who's most blessed among women here? Most blessed among women is Yael, the wife of Eber the Kenite. She is blessed among women in the tent. He asked for water. She gave him milk. In a noble bowl, she brought curd. She put her hand to the tent peg and her right hand to the workman's hammer. And she hammered Sisera. She smashed his head. She struck through the pierced his temple. Wow, what a beautiful song that is, right? We actually sang that song in our congregation one time. We made a nice song out of it. You know, the Thais can make a song, you know. Pierce his head. You know. But, wow. Yeah, you know, you can't argue with it. It's in the Bible. She is blessed among women here. And who is it? It is Yael, the wife of Eber the Kenite. Wow. What a blessing. They knew Yahweh in Mount Seir. Yael was a Kenite. Like I said, remember Genesis 4. The metal workers, Tubal Cain, and they learned to work that hammer somewhere. Because, yeah, I was thinking to myself as reading that, a skull is pretty hard. And if you got a tent peg and you're coming with a hammer, you got to be able to know how to hit that hammer and hit it pretty hard if you're going to put it through somebody's skull. And this lady pretty much did it you know, very smooth without thinking twice about it, and was blessed for it. 1 Samuel 15, right? This is with King Saul. 1 Samuel 15. When Saul is going to go out to war, right? And look what he says before he goes. And Samuel said to Saul, Yahweh sent me to anoint you king over his people, over Israel. And now listen to the voice of the words of Yahweh. So says Yahweh of hosts, I will visit Amalek with what he did to Israel, how he set himself against him in a way when he came up from Egypt. Now go, and you shall strike Amalek and destroy all that he has, and you shall have no pity on him, and you shall put to death all, from man to woman, from little one to suckling, from ox to sheep, from camel to donkey. Well, so this is a people that are not blessed. This is a people that you don't want to be on that side. And Saul listened and mustered the people in Telaim, 200,000 footmen, and 10,000 were men of Judah. And Saul came to the city of Amalek and lie in wait in a torrent bed. And Saul said to the Kenite, go, depart, get out from the midst of Amalek, lest I destroy you with them. For you acted with kindness toward the sons of Israel when they came up out of Egypt, and the Kenite departed from the midst of Amalek. So here it is. You're talking about 400 years later, and the king is sitting there thinking, before I can destroy these people, I have to go and tell the Kenites, get out of here, or you're going to be hurt. And that's the way it always is, we see. And every time, they're always in an alliance with Israel, to one degree and another, being protected by Israel, and even being blessed by Israel. And like I said, when you're looking at hundreds of years later, I mean, Israel actually, after one, you know, if you look in the book of Judges, after one generation, sometimes they didn't even remember Yahweh, never mind remembering Kenites. And yet here, 400 years later, they're still remembering the Kenites. So Saul helps them. They live near Arad, if anybody remembers or has come with us down to Arad, right? That's where they found that altar down there, the altar with the animal sacrifice on it. They had a temple like Solomon worshipped. So they had a temple down there in Arad, and it's very interesting because the temple in Arad is not a pagan temple. The temple is not facing east, it's facing west, and it kind of mystifies, you know, the scholars to, why is this temple like Solomon's temple, and it's not, there's nothing pagan that's there, and there is a standing stone, like you see, almost exactly like in the Tabernacle of David. And this is a Kenite. This is a Kenite temple. So, and again, we never see anywhere in Scripture where the Kenites are being rebuked by Yahweh for having any kind of pagan worship. Well before Israel was a nation, they were worshiping Yahweh in Mount Seir, and they, from what we see, they're only being supported and blessed and not doing anything pagan. Nehemiah 3, right? When Nehemiah is building the wall after the children of Israel come back, Nehemiah chapter 3 in verse 14, who is helping them? And the dung gate was made strong by Malchiah, the son of Rechab, the ruler of part of Beth-Hakarim. He built it and made stand its doors, its locks and bars. So even after Israel gets taken captive by Babylon, even after they come back 70 years later, all that time, you know, now we're talking about not 400 or 500 years, we're talking about more than 1,000 years later, who's helping to rebuild the walls? The Rechabites. So they're still there helping Nehemiah. So let's kind of look in their genealogy a little bit and see, you know, exactly where these people are from, who are they part of, and how do they fit in with all this. So we already went in 1 Chronicles 4 and we showed, you know, that the Kenites were mixed in with Judah. There's no doubt about that. Like I said, Caleb was from Judah, but Caleb was also a Kenite. And maybe I'll just go back there a minute in 1 Chronicles. Actually, first I'll go to chapter 2. Verse And like I said, verse 55, these are the Kenites who came from Hemath, the father of the house of Rechab. So the Kenites are Rechabites. And as we go to chapter 4, in verse 9, we get in again Jabez, right? And the prayer of Jabez. But then we see, who are these people? Verse 12, these are the men of Rechab. And verse 13, the sons of Kenaz. So, and we see the same thing. Verse 15, the sons of Caleb, the sons of Jephunneh, Ira, Elah, Nahum, and the Elah's sons was Kenaz. So we see that Judah was mixed very, very deep in with these Kenites. They intermarried and were part of the same tribe. Even when you look at where the Kenites lived in Israel, it was in the land where Judah was. Maon, which we were down there in Maon, which is south of Jerusalem. And several of the areas there that are part of the land of Judah was there by then. Exodus 12. Exodus 12, 37 and 38. When the Israelites are leaving, look what it says. And the sons of Israel traveled from Ramses to Succoth, the men being about 600,000 on foot, apart from little ones. And also a mixed multitude went up with them in flocks and herds and many livestock. So there's a mixed multitude with them. We know when they went out also, like I said, because Moses' family, his father-in-law, was also a Kenite. So there it's also mixed in with the Levites even, because Moses is a Levite. But it's interesting because when you look up the word mixed multitude, you know what that word is in Hebrew? Arab. That's the word. The word Arab is mixed for mixed multitude. That's what the word is. Because the Arab, where did the Arabs come from, right? With Ishmael. And when you look at even the genealogy from Cain to Esau, that was mixed with Isaac. So the Hebrew word is Arab, but there was a mixed multitude. And I've given messages on this that many times a mixed multitude causes problems within your camp. But in the case of the Kenites, it was the opposite, because they actually were the strong people before Israel was the strong people. And like I said, even as we see Israel getting kicked out of the land, we never see the Kenites getting kicked out of anywhere. And then when they come back to the land, who's helping them build the walls? The Kenites and the Rechabites. Exodus 3 and verse 1. Exodus 3 and verse 1. And Moses was tending the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. Like I said, he's not a pagan priest, because Aaron and Moses and the heads of the tribes of Israel are asking him to do sacrifice to Yahweh on their behalf. So he certainly isn't a pagan priest. And he led the flock behind the wilderness and came to the mountain of the Elohim to Horeb. Mount Horeb. Down in Saudi Arabia, where we've been and where we will be again shortly. So we see that Jethro was a priest of Midian, lived in Sinai, knew Yahweh, and like I said, Moses the Levite mixed with Jethro's line. It's really interesting because I don't know if any of you remember the ones that have been to Israel, or if you've studied the Druses, not the Druids, not the pagans, but the Druses. The Druses are people that live in the north of Israel and also in Syria, and they have a very odd religion. They're like a kind of like a break off from Islam, but they have really nice people. I've worked with them a lot in the north when I was doing some work with the Israeli government. I worked with the Druzes. I really, really like them because they're really, really nice people. They do have some odd beliefs. If you notice Druzes, if you're in Israel, they're wearing kind of like black clothes and kind of like this kind of weird hat, like almost like a hat like you would think like if it's winter. And the men wear something called baggy pants. And they wear baggy pants because they believe that the Messiah has to be born from a man. And they're afraid if, like, if the Messiah is born and the man doesn't know it, he might fall down his pant leg, I guess, and fall out of the pant leg and crack his skull or whatever. So the men, particularly the priests, they wear these baggy pants. So if the Messiah is born, he'll fall into the baggy pants and he'll be safe. So like I said, they have very, very strange beliefs, but they're extremely good people and really, really nice people. And I've met several of their priests, and actually, wow, I mean, some of the really, really top priests there that I've spoken with, I felt like they were like this close to coming to faith. Because they're really honest people, and they kind of have like some gaps in their theology, and who knows, it's in Yahweh's hands. But what's interesting is, to the Druze, they have one very, very big hero in their religion. And you would think, you know, is it Moses? You know, is it the prophet Elijah? Elijah is pretty high up in their religion, but he's not the highest one. The highest one in the Druze religion is Jethro. Believe it or not, Jethro. They have all these things about Jethro, the father-in-law of Moses. And like I said, who knows? You never know what's going on. But it's very interesting that that's their big hero. They have museums for Jethro and all the things. They have holidays just for Jethro. Why make a religion just for Jethro? I don't know. But all things in Yahweh's timing. Exodus 18. Because Jethro is a pretty important person in Scripture. Exodus 18. And Jethro, the priest of Midian, right? They call him this over and over again. He is a priest of Yahweh, the father-in-law of Moses, heard all which Elohim had done for Moses and for his people Israel, that Yahweh had caused Israel to go out from Egypt. He seems to know Yahweh's name. He uses Yahweh's name. Drop down to verse 5. And Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, and his sons and his wife came to Moses to the wilderness where he camped at the Mount of Elohim. This is at Mount Sinai. And he said to Moses, I'm your father-in-law Jethro, and your wife and your two sons with her have come to you. And Moses went out to meet his father-in-law and bowed and kissed him. And he asked each to his neighbor as to their welfare, and they entered the tent. And Moses told his father-in-law all that Yahweh had done to Pharaoh and to Egypt on account of Israel, all the trouble which they had found in the way, and Yahweh had delivered them. And Jethro rejoiced regarding all the good which Yahweh had done to Israel, whom he had delivered from the hand of Egypt. And Jethro said, Blessed be Yahweh, who has delivered you from the hand of Egypt and from the hand of Pharaoh, he who delivered the people from under the hand of Egypt. Now I know that Yahweh is greater than all Elohim, truly in the way in which he acted proudly against them. And Jethro, the father-in-law of Moses, took a burnt offering and sacrifices to Elohim. And Aaron and all the elders of Israel came to eat bread before Elohim with Moses' father-in-law. So here it is, right? He's doing sacrifice, and they're abiding by it, and even eating of the sacrifice, and accepting Jethro as a priest. And Moses is even asking him, please come with us. You know, please come with us. We need you for eyes and ears. Drop down to verse 19. He says, Now listen to my voice. I will advise you, and may Elohim be with you. You be for this people before Elohim, and you bring the matters to Elohim. So now, not only is Moses asking him to come with him, not only is Moses, you know, accepting a sacrifice Jethro does, now he's asking Jethro for counsel, and Jethro's going to tell him exactly how to make counsel. Verse 20, And you warn them as the statutes and the laws of the Torah. Imagine, this is what Jethro's telling them. Warn them of the statutes and laws of the Torah. And make known to them the way in which they should walk and the work which they should do. And you shall look out men of ability of all the people who fear Elohim, men of truth, hating unjust gain. And you place these over them, rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, and rulers of ten. And let them judge the people at all times. And it shall be that every great matter they shall bring to you, and every small matter they shall judge. And you make it easy on yourself, and let them bear with you. If you do this thing, and Elohim command you, you will be able to stand, and also this people will go into peace to their place. And Moses listened to the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he said. And Moses chose men of ability from all Israel and made them heads over the people, rulers of 1,000, rulers of 100, rulers of 50, and rulers of 10. So let's be logical here, right? Moses is the servant of Yahweh. Moses is going up and seeing Yahweh face to face. When the Israelites come against Moses, what does Yahweh say? Look, I don't talk to Moses like you other clowns. I talk to him face to face. He is my servant, right? And Moses had no, you know, insecurity about that whatsoever. And yet, with Moses being that way, who is he going and taking counsel for and listening to everything he says? His father-in-law Jethro. So is he respecting him as a priest of Yahweh? Of course. Of course, there's no way that he would be in Yahweh's presence and the Spirit moving Moses the way it did and how he's going. And that if Jethro was not a man of Yahweh, there's no way on earth that Moses would be following him and listening to him. So it says something about this. And what is he again? He's a Kenite. He's a Kenite. So important. And like I said, the lineages are mixed together. The lineages are mixed together. Numbers 10. Numbers chapter 10, verse 29. And Moses, and Moses said to Hobab, the son of Reuel, the Midianite, Moses' father-in-law, so this is another name he has. Maybe it's a, who knows if it's a Aramaic name or it's another name, but people do have multiple names in Scripture, we know that. So he says to his father-in-law, we are pulling up stakes to go to the place of which Yahweh has said, I will give it to you. Go with us, and I will do good to you, for Yahweh has spoken good concerning Israel. And he said to him, I shall not go, but I shall go to my land and to my kindred. And he said, please do not forsake us, because you know how we encamp in the wilderness, and you shall be to us for eyes. And it shall be when you go with us, yea, it shall be that what good Yahweh shall do to us, we shall do good to you. And they pulled up stakes from the mount of Yahweh 3 days' journey, and the ark of the covenant of Yahweh pulled out before them 3 days' journey to seek out a resting place for them. And the cloud of Yahweh was on them by day as they pulled up stakes from the camp. And it happened when the ark pulled up, Moses said, rise, O Yahweh, and your enemies shall be scattered, and those hating you will flee from your presence. And when it rested, he said, return, O Yahweh, to the myriads of the thousands of Israel. So very clearly right here, Moses knew he had to have, you know, his eyes and ears. He had to have a Jethro. He had to have somebody, you know, from this clan that Yahweh knew, from Mount Seir, that Yahweh knew these people for hundreds of years. Like I said, they're the descendants of Job, which they all knew who Job was. That wasn't a secret. And he needed it. And I felt the same way, you know. I always felt that way. Even before I knew that Yahweh was going to bring us to Jordan, you know, studying this back, like I said, in 2013, 2014, I understood the significance of Jethro. And certainly, when Yahweh talked about coming to Jordan, I knew there's no way you could do it without a Jethro. I saw it years ago with some brethren that had come here to Jordan and were staying here, and they were coming and meeting us in Israel. And I saw that if you did not have a tribe here that's helping you, it's virtually impossible. Everything in Jordan is tribal. And just like our guide was telling us today, you know, how things work when there's a problem, when you need help, when you're getting married, when you're drinking coffee, it doesn't matter what is going on in life, you know, you got to have a Jethro. You know, it just, that's just the way it was. Going all the way back to Moses that we see this. We see the importance. We don't really understand how Yahweh got to Mount Seir and, you know, what he was doing on this side of the Jordan for all those years before Israel was a nation. All we know he was. We just know he was. We know that there was nothing wrong with it. We know these people seem to be righteous, that they were good people. You know, they're only being blessed and they only served Yahweh. So you got to find your Jethro if you're going to, you know, do something over here. Judges 1 and verse 16. Judges chapter 1 and verse 16. And the sons of the Kenite, the father-in-law of Moses, had gone up out of the city of Palms with the sons of Judah to the wilderness of Judah, which is in the south of Arad, and they went and lived with the people. So it is very hard, like we learned today, you know, because these people are nomads, they're Bedouins, they stay in the same place. The reason how we know so many biblical places in both Israel and Jordan and even Saudi Arabia today is from these Bedouins, because they've lived there for thousands of years. It's one of the saddest things with this whole NEOM project that's going on is that Saudi Arabia is literally wiping out the Bedouins that have lived there since the time of Moses, the families, and killing them. Some, because some of them will leave. They're saying, I'm not getting off my land. And the Saudi Arabian government and the military is coming and killing these people. But, you know, they're very, very simple-minded people. They're very good people. They're honest people. And, you know, as we see here, they lived with Judah. They were part of, mingled in with their tribe. And they lived in the land there in Arad and other areas, like I said, Maon and other areas of Israel. Joshua 6. Joshua 6, when Israel is first coming into the land, what is the first place that they go to? We were right across from it today, right? Jericho. Jericho is the first place they go to. And who was the person in Jericho that helped them? We can read about it right here. Joshua 6, 22 and 23. And Yehoshua said to the two men who had spied out the land, go into the house of the woman, the innkeeper, and bring the woman out from there and all whom she has, as you have sworn to her. And the young men, the spies, went in and brought out Rahab and her father and her mother and her brothers and all whom she had, yea, they brought all her family and set them outside the camp of Israel. So most translations mistranslate Rahab as a harlot, which would make no sense whatsoever, because harlots never have their mom and dad living in the same apartment with them. You know, you just figure out how that ain't going to work out, right? And actually, if you look up the word, it really is not harlot, it's innkeeper. It's very similar in the Hebrew because an innkeeper, you know, has many different people coming through their house and staying there. And a harlot does too, but it is not the same. So it is Rahab, the innkeeper. And Rahab, as we look in the Talmud, it says that she is Rahab the Rechabite. Rahab, Rechabite, same thing. So they're saying she is Rahab the Rechabite. Rahab the Rechabite. Drop down to verse 25 there. And Yehoshua kept alive Rahab the innkeeper in the house of her father and all whom she had. And she lives in the midst of Israel to this day. For she hid the messengers whom Yehoshua sent to spy out in Jericho. So we see another Rechabite, you know, Kenite, that is helping Israel in a very important time. Joshua 2, in verse 1, when we look at this Rahab, right? And Joshua the son of Nun sent two men out to Shittim to spy secretly. Shittim is just right before the crossing up there. Actually, where Shittim is not that far from where Sodom is. Go look over the land in Jericho. And they went and came into the house of a woman, an innkeeper, and her name was Rahab. And they lay down there. So they're hiding in her house. And look what she says, which is very interesting. Verse 9. And she said to the men, I know that Yahweh has given the land to you, and that your terror has fallen on us, and that all those living in the land have melted before you. How would she know that? For we have heard how Yahweh dried up the water of the Red Sea before you as you were going out of Egypt. Also that which you have done to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon, and to Og, whom you destroyed. And we have heard, and our heart is melted, and there still does not rise the spirit in any man because of you. For Yahweh your Elohim, he is Elohim in the heavens above and in the earth below. And now please swear to me by Yahweh, since I have dealt with you in kindness, that you will also deal with my father's house in kindness, and shall give to me a true token, and shall keep alive my father and my mother and my brothers and my sisters, and all that is to them, and shall deliver our souls from death. And the men said to her, our life instead of yours, if you do not tell this business of ours, then it will be when Yahweh gives this land to us that we will deal with you in kindness and truth. So, very clearly here that Rahab knew about Yahweh. She knew about what Yahweh did. And because of, like I said, where she's coming from her lineage. Numbers 14. Like I said, Caleb is a Kenite. And we see Caleb is one of the most zealous going into the promised land. Numbers 14 and verse 20. And Yahweh said, I have forgiven you according to your word, but as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of Yahweh. For all the men who are seeing my glory and the miracles which I have done in Egypt and in the wilderness and have tried me these 10 times and have not listened to my voice, they shall not see the land which I have sworn to their fathers. Yea, not one of those who provoke me shall see it. And my servant Caleb, because there is another spirit in him, and he is fully following me, I shall bring him into the land into which he has gone, and his seed shall possess it, right? And his seed is part Judah, but also part Kenite. So we see that Caleb is called his servant and is following him in all things. Numbers 32, 10 through 12. Numbers 32, 10 through 12. And the anger of Yahweh glowed in that day as he swore, saying, surely none of the men that came out of Egypt from 20 years old and upward shall see the land which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, because they have not wholly followed me, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, and Yehoshua, the son of Nun, for they have fully followed Yahweh. So very, very clearly we see his lineage there. He's a Kenizzite. Joshua 14 in verse 12. Joshua 14 in verse 12. Joshua 14 in verse 12. And now give to me this mountain of which Yahweh spoke in that day, for you heard in that day how the sons of Anak were there in the great walled cities. If Yahweh shall be with me, then I shall dispossess them as Yahweh has spoken. And Yehoshua blessed him, talking about Caleb, and he gave Hebron to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, for an inheritance. Therefore Hebron has belonged to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, for an inheritance to this day, because he fully followed after Yahweh, the Elohim of Israel. So, wow, you're talking about one of the really, really important city there. You know, when you're talking about Hebron, and he gets that as an inheritance. Joshua 15, 12 and 13. And the west border was to the great sea and to its coast. This is the border of the sons of Judah all around for their families. And he gave a portion to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, among the sons of Judah, according to the command of Yahweh to Jehoshua, the city of Arba, the father of Anak. It is Hebron. So Hebron is his inheritance, verse 16. And Caleb said, he who strikes the city of Sepher and captures it, I shall give my daughter Ashka to him for a wife. And Othiel, the son of Kenaz, the brother of Caleb, captured it. And he gave his daughter Ashka to him for a wife. And it happened as she came that she persuaded him to ask from her father a field. And she dismounted from the donkey, and Caleb came to her. "What do you desire?" And she said, "Give a blessing to me. You have given me the land of the south, then you shall give to me springs of water." And he gave her the upper springs and the lower springs. This is the inheritance of the tribe of the sons of Judah to their families. And the cities at the furthest border of the tribe, the sons of Judah, were to the border of Edom in the south, Kabzeel, and Eder, and Jegor, and Kenah. Kenah, this is Timnah, which is Kenah, and Dimona, and Adon. And Timnah is all the way down in the south, where the copper mines are in the Israeli side. So we see that the great inheritance coming from that. And drop down to verse 54. In Humta, in the city of Arba, which is Hebron, and Zior, 9 cities and their villages, Maon, Carmel, and Ziph, in Judah, and Jezreel, and Yokdiam, and Zenoah, Cain, Gilbea, and Timnah, 10 cities and their villages. So these are the different villages, and we see where the Kenites are intermingling with the Judahites. 1 Chronicles 4 in verse 11. 1 Chronicles 4 in verse 11. And Caleb, the brother of Shua, fathered Mahir. He was the father of Eston. And Eston fathered Beth Rapha and Pasea. And Tehina, the father of Irahash. These are the men of Rekah, the sons of Kenaz, Othiel, and Syria, and the son of Othiel, and Hathas. And Mia, Nothai, fathered Ophrah, and Syria, fathered Joab, the father of the valley of the craftsmen. Like we said, they were craftsmen. And the sons of Caleb, the sons of Jephunneh, Ura, Elah, Naam, and Elah's son was Kenaz. Now as we drop down here, to verse 17, and the sons of Ezra, Jethro, and Mered, and Ephah, and Jalon, and she conceived Miriam, and Shema, and Ishba, Estimoah's father, and his wife, Jehudijah, bore Jared, the father of Gedor, and Heber, the father of Soko, and Jethkuthiel, the father of Zenoah, and these are the sons of Bithiah, the daughter of Pharaoh, whom Mered took. That's Moses' stepmother, Bithiah. These are the sons of Bithiah, the daughter of Pharaoh. So now we see, right, Moses grew up in Pharaoh's court. Bithiah was his stepmother. And we see that Bithiah is also intermarrying within the house of Israel. So Bithiah left Israel with Moses. They have it in the movie, they have it in history books. And now we see even Bithiah is intermarrying with the tribe over here. Let's go back to Chronicles 2, just a couple of chapters before that, verse 42. And the sons of Caleb, the brother of Jerahmeel, were his firstborn, Mesha, who was the father of Ziph, and the sons of Marashah, the father of Hebron. So now we're back to Caleb again, verse 45. And the son of Shammai was Maon, and Maon was the father of Betzor. Like I said, these are some of the areas that Caleb, where the Kenites live, because he was a Kenite, where his relatives came. And verse 48. Caleb's concubine, Maha, bore Sheber and Tirhanah. She also bore Saph, the father of Madmanah, Shiva, the father of Machbenah, and the father of Gibeah, and Caleb's daughter was Ashka, as we already know. These were the sons of Caleb, the son of Hur, the firstborn of Ephratah, was Shobal, the father of Kirjas Jearim, Salma, the father of Bethlehem, Haraph, the father of Beth-Gadar. So here it is, even the father of Bethlehem, the town where Yeshua is born, the Messiah, is interconnected with the Kenites. First Chronicles 2 and verse 11. Go back. And where it's talking about, this is the whole genealogy, right? That we're getting to Bethlehem, because who's born in Bethlehem? The Messiah. And who's in that genealogy? And and Nachshon fathered Salma, and Salma fathered Boaz, and Boaz fathered Obed, and Obed fathered Jesse. So this is the whole genealogy of King David to Yeshua, and the Kenites are in that genealogy. It's like, wow, if that's not an important fact, I don't know what is. So actually, they are actually in the genealogy and part of the family of King David. And if you look at Matthew, when we look at Yeshua's genealogy, we see this even in the New Testament, Matthew 1 in verse 5. And Salmon fathered Boaz out of Rahab, right? Rahab the Rechabite. And Boaz fathered Obed out of Ruth, and Obed fathered Jesse. So we even see it in the New Testament. Rahab, the wife of Salma. 1 Chronicles 2, back to 1 Chronicles 2, 50 and 51, and we see the same thing. Right, these are the sons of Caleb, the son of Hur, the firstborn of Ephratah, of Shobal, the father of Kirjas Jearim, Salma, the father of Bethlehem. The same one we just read in Yeshua's genealogy. So, we clearly see that Salma was a Rechabite, you know, and this is in the genealogy of Yeshua. So let's look at King David now, because this is all connected with King David's genealogy also. So if Rechab was a Kenite, then David also had to be part Kenite. 1 Samuel 23, 24 and 25. First Samuel 23:24-25. And this is when King Saul is coming after King David, right? Verse 14, David stayed in the wilderness and the strongholds, right? And Saul is after him. And look at verse 24. And they rose up and went to Ziph before Saul. But David and his men were in the wilderness of Maon, in the Arabah on the south of the desert. Where did we just say that the Kenites were living? In Maon. And this is where he's going. And Saul and his men went to search, and they told David, and he went down to the rock and stayed in the wilderness of Maon. And Saul heard and pursued David in the wilderness of Maon. 1 Samuel 25, the next chapter. And Samuel died, and all Israel was gathered and mourned for him, and they buried him in the house in Ramah. And David rose up and went down to the wilderness of Paran. And a certain man was in Maon, right, where he just was before this when he was hiding, and his work was in Carmel. And the man was very great, and there were 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats, and he was shearing his flock in Carmel. And the man's name was Nabal, and his wife was Abigail, who's going to become David's wife. And the woman was of good understanding and beautiful of form. And the man was cruel and evil in his dealings. And he was a Calebite from Caleb. And where is Caleb from? Caleb is from the Kenites. And David marries into it where he's already a relative anyway. But that's maybe one of the reasons he took Abigail for his wife. Because clans were able to intermarry and they were part of the same clan. So did David have a heart for the Kenites? Let's take a look. 1 Samuel 30, because as David goes out to Ziklag, remember? And he goes out and he gets all the spoils. Look what he does after he gets the spoils. 1 Samuel 30, verse 18. And David recovered all that the Amalekites had taken, and David recovered his two rights. Remember when they came back, and the Amalekites came and took all the people, they took all the stuff, they took David's wife, they were crying and everything, and now they went after them, right? And they were mad, and they wind up finding the Amalekites at Ziklag, they took all the things back. David recovers everything, and now let's see what happens. And nothing was missing to them, from the small even to the great, to the sons and daughters, and from the plunder, even to all that they had taken for themselves, David brought back the whole of it. And David took all the flock and the herd, and they drove on before the other cattle, and David said, this is David's prize. So he takes all the stuff back, all the Amalekite stuff. He's happy it's his prize, and what does he wind up doing with it? Let's take a look. Verse 26, and David came to Ziklag, and he sent of the plunder of the elders of Judah to his friends, saying, behold, a blessing for you of the plunder of the enemies of Yahweh. So who are his friends that he's sending this to? To those in Bethel, in the house of Ramoth of Negeb, and to those in Jatir, and to those in Ariar. That's actually up here, not that far, where the tribe of Reuben starts. And those in Sifmoth, and to those in Eshtimoa, and to those in Rahel, and to those in the city of the Yeramelites, and to those in the city of the Kenites. To those in the city of the Kenites, and to those in Hormah, and to those in Koreshan, and to those in Ahach, and to those in Hebron, and to all the places where David had gone and down, he and his men. So here it is, the Kenites are not involved in this whatsoever. They're not involved. He's not there. But he goes and he wins this big battle. He has all this stuff. He wants to give to his friends. And who do they mention he gives to? The Kenites. So there is not only just relatives, you know, by intermarriage, but they're close enough that as he's happy in winning this big battle, these are the people he's thinking, I want to share this stuff with. So again, like I said, whether it's King Saul, whether it's King David, we never ever see the Israelites, you know, being at odds with the Rechabites or the Kenites. We always see them as allies with their doing. So again, you know, these people are around today, as we have found out. You know, I'm writing this 13 years ago, not thinking that I'm going to be sitting in a room of a Kenite and be giving this message 13 years later. But here we are. Yahweh brings us, and it's kind of funny how things all come around. They're the wilderness people of Yahweh. You know, I put, there seems to be some of these people near the copper fields in Punan. There's a copper fields right behind us. I didn't know this was the place at the time. And I do know that because we have helped different Christian people in Iraq when the problems were going on over there years ago, when the ISIS came in there and were really slaughtering these people. I mean, they went from, I think it was around close to 2 million Christians there down to maybe 20 or 30,000. Not all were killed, some fled, but a lot were killed. And we were helping these people. We were trying to send them clothing and aid and money and whatever we could. And others in Syria. So while we were in Israel, we had the blessing of helping different Christian people. And then also, like I said, we started finding out that these Kenites are also in the area. And because of the way things are and because of the way Satan knows the importance of them, some of them have been persecuted. And like I said, right now, where they are in Turkey, in Syria, in Palmyra, that's the very place that Turkey's coming in to build their base. And Syria is slaughtering Christians. This is not getting a lot of play in the news, but it's getting worse, what's happening there. And unfortunately, some of the people beside the Christians that are getting slaughtered are the Kenites. It's happening in the areas where they are. So, you know, in Revelation 3 and verse 7, it talks about to the Philadelphian. And it is kind of interesting that Ramat Ammon, you know, which is Ammon, you know, Jordan, Ammon, is anciently called Philadelphia. There's many things over there they have from that time, from the Roman time period, where it was Philadelphia. And in Numbers 24, there's a prophecy here that talks about these people in the end time. Numbers 24. Numbers 24 and verse 14. says, "And now behold, I go to my people, come, and I will counsel you what this people shall do to your people in the latter days." So this is a prophecy of what's going to happen in the latter days, right? And what's going on? And what does it say? Verse 17. "I shall see him, but not now. I shall behold him, but not near. A star leads forth out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel, and shall dash the corners of Moab, and break down the sons of turmoil." We know this is Messianic prophecy talking about Yeshua. "And Edom shall be a possession, and Mount Seir shall be a possession for his foes. But Israel will do mightily. And one out of Jacob shall rule, and will destroy the survivors from Ar. And he looked upon Amalek, and took up this parallel against him. Amalek was the first of the nations, but his latter end is to destruction forever. And he looked upon the Kenites, and he took up this parable." So this is end time. He said, let me tell you what's going to happen in the latter days. "And he took up this parable and said, your dwelling place shall be enduring, and your nest shall be in Selah." Your nest shall be in Selah. "But the Kenites shall be..." And the word "consumed" literally means like brutish, for burning, like will be rough, will be like purified, you could say. "Until Assyria shall carry you away." So it's very, very interesting that part of the prophecy is he looked upon the Kenites and he looked to the parable and said, "Your dwelling place shall be enduring, and your nest shall be in Selah." And here we are. So, part three of this is in real time. We will see how it works out. We will see what Yahweh does, how this whole thing goes. And part three of this thing is in real time. I mentioned last week, I'll just mention it now, I'm not going to get too much into it, you know, why Yahweh did not kill Cain after Cain killed his brother. You know, like I said, the only time in the Bible you ever see this where he says, "Am I my brother's keeper?" And we know, yes, we know you are your brother's keeper because of the Levirate law, that if the brother dies childish, the first born, that the brother will raise up to him, will be for the brother. And this is why in the book of Hebrews, when it talks about the father of the faithful, we see Abel is in there. And it says that Abel, you know, has hope. Abel speaks, his lineage speaks until today. And what is that lineage through? It's a lineage through the Kenites that is the lineage now of righteous Abel. We see all throughout time, they have only been righteous people. We don't see them ever being rebuked, doing anything evil, doing anything bad. And now here we are in the end time being served and being blessed by the Kenites. And they make a wild chicken, don't they? So, like I said, part three is in real time. You know, we're living it, it's what Yahweh's doing, but it really is amazing that, like I said, these ancient people that is so mysterious, the lineage is everywhere, everything they're doing is always with Israel, they're always being blessed, and then out of nowhere, this prophecy comes from the end time, and who's in the prophecy? The Kenites. And where are they prophesied to be? In Selah. And where are we? In Selah. So, wow, you know, like I said, I'm in awe of what Yahweh has done, and to be continued. To be continued. Yahweh bless. Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.